Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. My name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, and here we are at episode 175 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. As ever, big shout to our Patreon supporters, without whom we would not be able to produce this podcast. If you like what you hear and you want to support, just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, where you'll find a drop-down box and the link to the Patreon page is there. And if not, that's fine, because this content is free for everyone. Well, today, I'm going to take you to meet Kira Rathbone. And if you don't know Kira, she's the typewriter artist. Yep, typewriter. If you're a follower of Landscape Artist of the Year on Sky Arts, you would have seen her on there a couple of years ago, just using a typewriter as a drawing tool. And when I went to the Art Car Boot Fair this year, I knew I was approaching Kira's stall long before I saw her, because she'd put a microphone in front of the typewriter, which was joined up to a speaker. The first artist I've ever seen that's literally busking. Well, that's turned out to be a fairly good segue, because if I remember rightly, we go straight into our conversation talking about the Art Car Boot Fair. So, I think I'll say bye for now and catch you at the end, and let you join me over Zoom speaking to Kira Rathbone. How did you find the boot sale?
Yeah, it was good. I found it seemed a bit kind of quieter than before.
It felt like it, didn't it?
It is like post like lockdown, like yeah. Times, isn't it? It's like, I don't know if it's affected everything, you know,
but yeah,
it was really nice, and there was still the buzz there, but yeah, I found that it wasn't quite as like intense.
Yeah,
as being.
But it was, yeah, it's definitely my favorite art happening of the year.
Definitely mine too. I wanted to try and get in there for years, but I didn't know how. And then it was Sophie Parkin. She said she put me in touch with Karen.
So, nice.
And Karen invited me to come and do it in 2018. So when I was there, I was just like, I'm in the right place.
Yeah, that was good fun. Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. Good weather as well. I know we sound like a couple of old Brits saying that, but yeah, it was good weather to
Marvelous
be there,
weather,
wasn't it?
Yes.
Right, Kira, I've got several questions that I ask each artist on this podcast. The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
I would say that I use old typewriters to draw with. So I use the characters from the typewriters, looking at them as shapes and textures, and I sort of draw or paint, directing where each one goes with the, by moving the paper up and down.
Yeah.
So I'm literally like drawing with the typewriter.
Brilliant. So are you restricted to A1? A4.
A4, but it's actually 22 centimetres, not 21.
Okay.
If we're going to get...
Yeah.
I'm restricted, yeah, on the one page. I have got an A3 typewriter.
So oh, wow, I don't think we've ever seen one.
So, and then, like, obviously, like, any height.
Yeah.
But if I want to work on something on a larger scale, then what I do is use multiple sheets.
Yeah, like tiles.
Yeah. So if I'm like, I was just down at St Ives doing a commission, and it was, we wanted, the idea was a panorama.
Yeah.
So I started there, and then I went there, and then there. So.
Because I'd seen your works that are A3, and presumed that that was just sort of raw sheets all put together, you know.
Sometimes I, because I scan everything I do really high res, and then I like sort of blowing them up. So that one there.
That
was about only little piece like that. But I enjoy blowing them up so that you can see the characters.
Yeah, nice.
Really. Yeah, I think it emphasises it a bit.
So I've got to ask, how did this come about?
I never set out to do. I didn't think, like, I'm going to make typewriter art ever.
Yeah, I figured that wasn't the case.
It came about because I was at art school, and, you know, like, fine art, it's like completely, it just sort of blew it open wide for me. And I didn't have really, when you look back, you can see like connections in what you
did. Of course, yeah.
But at the time, I was kind of like struggling to find a focus, and there was a girl in my studios who was typing on a typewriter some notes for her sketchbook, I think, and just seeing it, the typewriter made me reminded me that I bought one in a charity shop like a few years before, but just bought it and not done anything with it. And then I just thought, I'm going to get that typewriter and maybe I'll type something. But I always struggled with words to articulate what's in my head.
Oh, I'm with you there.
Really struggled, and like reading was quite slow for me, and I didn't have a knock-on effect is like not very much vocabulary. So when I had the typewriter in front of me, I was like intimidated, and I didn't know what to write at all. But I still really love the characters, and I love the print. I love that it's an instant print, and and I like the sensitivity of the keys. And I like the font. So it's kind of like, I still want to use you.
Well, as much as we're all so familiar now with typewritten text, be it from emails and computers and whatnot, when you see a letter written via a typewriter, there is that sort of little bit of nostalgia there, isn't there? It's a little bit more personal. It's between the pen and the computer screen, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it's sort of intentional
and
deliberate.
Yeah.
That someone set aside a bit of time actually do that. And so, yeah, I had that in front of me. And I remember this mixtape that my friend made me. You know, the little stickers that you'd write on? He'd put, like, I think he'd put, like, a row of question marks or a row of forward slashes. And I remember that made me think, maybe I could do some of that. So I was just, like, pressing, like, LLLLLL, something like that. And then something just made me feel suddenly free. And
I could use
the machine. And I still wasn't like, right, I'm going to draw like portraits and landscapes. It was just like an experiment.
Mark making.
It kind of unlocked it for me, because you know, you need to know what you're going to write if you're going to type it.
Of course,
To suddenly see them as shapes, like an L is, a row of L's is quite a nice pattern. And then I started moving the paper, like, see if I could maybe draw with it. That Clayton, I think it's called.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice.
So I was just like, oh, maybe I could do a vertical something. And then I was like overlapping a bit. It quite quickly became like a fluid movement on there.
Yeah. Did you draw on the A4 first and then sort of colour in, as it were, with the typewriter?
To begin with, it was just free type. And as I got more into it and I wanted to do portraits, I marked it out with a
pencil.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah, more precise.
And I did do that for a while, and I did a little exhibition in Bristol with people, like my friends and stuff. Something about that was like containing it too much.
Yeah.
And although I have done that a bit over the years with the pencil, I really don't want to, because it's
not authentic.
What it's
yeah.
going to be before it's done.
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Did you have art or creativity in the home growing up?
Yeah. So my gran lived with us, and she was a really good painter, not just as a hobby, but I think she could have, you know, she could have done pretty well out of it if she tried to make a living out of it. So, yeah, that was around that all the time. My mum made flowers out of sugar. You know, when you're growing up, you just think, oh, everybody's mum must do this.
Of course, yeah.
And it's only when you get older that you realise how unusual it is. But her flowers were, you couldn't tell the difference between the real one and the one she'd made, like the way she coloured them and
the
imperfections and the stages of a flower, a different. Yeah, it was really, really amazing. And then my dad was quite into photography. He's a scientist, so
brilliant.
He liked the technical, you know, technical kind of art.
Of course, yeah, nice.
So yeah, I think his mum was a really, really good lace maker.
Oh wow! So you had like creativity coming at you from all directions.
Yeah, I think it was.
If you've got any siblings, are they creative?
Yeah, my sister is in. She's down in Dorset, and she went down the food science and nutrition kind of path. But I think like the desire to be creative has always been.
Yeah.
You know, there, and she wanted to get into lino cut and
nice.
But now she started a business of air garden. You know, the air plants. So she gets like glass.
Yes, I do. So
she goes like beachcombing in Dorset and collects shells and bits of driftwood and just creates these little worlds
Brilliant.
Of the plant. And I think she wants to get more into, you know, the more making. So she's got that, you know, the urge to make. Yeah, we all have.
So did you always want to be around creativity and the arts?
Yeah, I think from about 16, I decided that, you know, it was painting for me. I loved painting. It's like every single day at home and in the studio at school. And I did A-level art and graphics. And I loved the graphics. I loved the technical drawing. But for me, it's like I loved it just knowing the skill. But I don't want to do that, that.
It's a handy tool to have, I suppose.
Yeah, like learning about perspective and, you know, like technical drawing, like exploded diagrams and shadows and how to achieve different effects. But it helped with an appreciation of, those kind of things, but in the painting and drawing, rather. I'm a bit more free than that, you know. I prefer it to be just let loose.
Yeah. Well, how long have you been using the typewriter now as a drawing tool?
It's about 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's developed. It's been through kind of lots of different stages.
So you must have a really niche appreciation for a typewriter, as in the texture of each letter and what each letter can give you, you know, as a pattern, as it were.
I couldn't really say, like, go and get me a like Olivetti Lettera 22. if I'm going somewhere and they say, oh, which typewriter? For me, it's like, I love how you discover, how you find a typewriter. Like it's a car boot sale or a charity shop.
Brilliant.
Or sometimes eBay if I'm after something specific. Like this one here is the Imperial Good Companion. Like the name was just like Good Companion.
It was ideal.
Yeah. And just the fact that it's sitting there waiting to be found and picked and given a new life. For me, it's like, if it's kind of small, portable, if it types, literally, like that's...
Yeah, that helps.
And, you know, the carriage is intact. yeah, then I'll give it a whiz.
How many do you have at any one time?
Probably in the studio, I've got maybe six or seven in here. So I've got my A3. I've got, this is the one I'm sort of using all the time at the moment. Take it down to, you know, out and about commissions. Yeah. And then I've got a backup one over there in case this one. And I've got a couple of other alphabets, but they don't really see the light of day very much. but they're waiting for their moment, like the Greek one.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I use something like that, it's really, you know, I'm quite lost.
Oh, can you imagine?
I love the character. Yeah, because you don't know where anything is or what you've got. So,
well, I suppose in your mind, everything is a tone of shade.
Yeah.
So, for instance, an L would be a sort of mid to low range tone compared to a capital A or something.
L's, lowercase L's, I would use for more like for vertical lines.
Yeah.
If I want a little bit of a fuzz around it, because when you start doing a vertical line with L's, you've got like the serif. So I'd only do that if I want that extra bit of texture on the edge. Yeah, and then something like a uppercase A, again, yeah, it could be good for, I'm just thinking like a wood grain.
Yeah, of course.
To get that kind of repeat. And then one thing that I found over the years is that when I'm typing something with architecture, especially more modern, I use a lot of symbols. So it's like hyphens, underscores, apostrophes, and not very many letters. But then when I get into nature, like natural subjects, trees, or like the more like ornate architecture, like Victorian kind of, I get to use a lot more numbers, and lowercase letters. And like with the rocks that I did on the, when I'm typing like rocks, that's when I'm really in the zone, because it's like you're just using everything, like throwing everything at it. But it is, it could be like a lowercase J with a seven and then a four and then a percentage marker. I'm really like getting my teeth into everything.
Well, it's experimenting with all those combinations over the years that I could well imagine that it's harder to try and think of what you do, because it comes, it's pretty much second nature. You know, your finger knows to be on the top row 1 second and dart over to the sort of bottom right the next.
Yeah, that's so nice that somebody understands it.
I can proper get it, because you're not going to go, oh, I think I need a G. Literally, your fingertip and your brain are just working together. You're just there to keep them both going, aren't you?
Yeah,
you
know? I'm just like channeling them, guiding them out. I feel like it's a translation of what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
It's like my language that I've developed over the years. I sort of soak up what I'm seeing and then kind of type it out onto the page.
And would you say you've got the strongest fingers in the art world?
Well, it's only one thing.
Yeah.
The strongest finger.
Bruce Lee used to do a one-inch punch, didn't he? You know, he could sort of knock you over with a finger sort of thing, so...
Maybe I could recreate.
Could I just sort of fast forward a little bit to when you was on the Landscape Artist of the Year? I didn't write the date down. Was you 18?
2018.
And how was that? Because you was very different to anyone else that they've been on there. You know, you get a lino cutter on them programs sometimes and they stand out because that's very different. But a typewriter must have stood out immensely.
Probably why they like had me on the show, isn't it? Like
either way, whatever.
Who cares? But it's great to go on something like that, because like we're talking about it now, you can really sort of show people closely. It's like being at showing them in the street. When I'm in the street, people have that encounter and really get to see it, what I'm doing in kind of their own space and time, without me going, come and have a look at this. But it was great to go. It was a great experience. I was disappointed but relieved when I didn't get through, because I was like, I don't know if I could do that again, you know.
Well, I bet every other artist was pleased that you didn't get through, because you must have been so annoying for them, just keep sort of banging away. They're like, oh, for God's sake, please.
Hang on a minute. Some people say it's therapeutic hearing it.
Oh, is it?
The guy next to me, Sam, he said it was all right. because I was like, is it annoying or anything? But you're in these kind of perspex cubes, so there's a bit of a distance between you. So, but yeah, it was amazing to be there and, you know, like answering their questions and, you know, that chance to let people know what it really means.
Yeah, and I'm not being funny, Kira, it's a bloody good advert for you as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, didn't do too badly with the sales off.
Brilliant.
And commissions
good.
And stuff. So it really, really helps, you know, like any artist, a bit of exposure on their work helps to communicate.
Of course.
People, doesn't it?
And the typewriter is a funny old thing because at the moment, there's a certain half of society that sees it as quite a nostalgic instrument. And there's the other part of society that sees it as an antique of an era gone by, you know.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, all of those things. And I think at the moment I'm getting a lot of 50th commissions or prints.
Brilliant.
And I love that. It's a harking back, to a time, because it's kind of the end of it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When we were, I mean, you're a bit older than me, but growing up, it was kind of the right at the end of the common use of them.
Well, it was still, when I was at school, and I know I'm sounding like fucking ancient here, but it was only in like the mid-80s, the girls had typewriter class.
Okay.
And that was an actual class.
Mid-80s,
it was just above the entrance to our school. So sometimes when you're sort of moving around the school, you could just hear the
Oh, wow. I would have hated that typewriter classes.
But could you imagine, I mean, looking at it with today's eyes, could you imagine just giving the girls typewriting classes? I mean, that was... Yeah, the most common job for the girls to go for.
Yeah, getting them ready.
Secretarial, You know, you can't really judge them with today's eyes, but...
No. But, yeah, I think, you know, when people see what I do, that's why I love doing what I do in public, doing it from life, because of that chance to have an exchange with a stranger who is curious enough to maybe, like, pass by a few times and be like, what's she doing? And then...
Yeah.
Might maybe come up and talk to me. And it's like you're saying, like, it's all like there's an age, you know, the youngest, they're like, what is that?
Yeah.
And you're like, of course, why would you know? But I get like to tell them, to introduce them to a typewriter for the first time. And then I think that maybe there's a bunch of kids that are like scattered about the world that grow up thinking that it's a drawing machine. But I love like getting them to look at the keys. Like, it's like there's a clue here, you know. What does that remind you of anything? And they say, you know, a keypad. And so, you know, like, oh, before computers, we had this. But actually, I like that it's a bit futuristic than computers because it prints at exactly the same time as that when you type the letter. And
then
I love that you might get a lady that spent her whole life typing on a machine like this, and it takes them straight, they say it takes them straight back. And I love that it's this that it is a tool to connect the past,
of course,
the future and the present.
Brilliant.
And in my work I'm sort of striving to get more authenticity in what I, you know, the sort of things that I type. It sort of conveys that more in it,
yeah,
that it's reaching to these different times. And because I've definitely done things that don't have any meaning, just to keep making stuff.
And that's perfect.
But, no. You know, you have to go on that. You have to do the thing to realise whether it's meaningless or not.
Yeah, so. Of course. It's all part of the course that you're on anyway, isn't it? But, yeah, nostalgia-wise, it's just oozing. And we all know nostalgia always tastes a bit better than reality, doesn't it, you know?
Wasn't it like I remember it being a bad word in art back in when I was at art school, like nostalgia is like, no, you mustn't do anything that's... But I was always there to not do what they told me.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was just about to say to you. I've never really taken notice of it because they're all just trends, aren't they, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's like fashion. You know, there's certain things that are classic and timeless and call it what you like. You know, they're powerful for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know when it was you realised that you wanted to be an artist?
At 16, I think I was at school and I just got so into the painting and, you know, it was time to choose to go whether to go to sixth form. And I thought, yeah, sixth form art. I'd seen the art room. I was like, I want to be in there. I want to be right down the end. And I got right down the end, little corner.
Excellent.
And my friend made me a little sign on the masking tape going, Kira's Corner, corner with a K.
Brilliant.
And that was, yeah, that's where you'd find me, like, nonstop, listening to music, you know, classic kind of listening to music all the time, painting all the time. My dad let me use, like, the front of the garage as my little studio at home. And then I had another little corner in my bedroom. So it was just, like, nonstop, really.
And do you get a chance to paint still?
I've been going back a bit, but using, like, rooted in my Typex. So I wanted to explore different mediums, but, like, the pattern side of it, of the Typex, but maybe, like, try making a stencil or a screen print.
Yeah.
And stamps. I love all those different processes of applying an image, but I like the texture of what I'm doing with the typewriter. So I'm on a bit of I'm experimenting quite a lot with that, and getting paint and inks and just trying to, I'm on a bit of another tangent there. So,
well, your canvas normally is sort of roughly 20 by 30 centimetres. Do you think the process would still work if you had stamps? You was doing it on board that was like 2 foot by 3 foot. Do you think you could still sort of, I'm throwing my arms around here as if I'm picking letters up and stamping them on, but do you think that'd still be possible?
So I've been doing big boards with, you know, like U's that are this big on a screen printing them on and mixing it and layering more and just being really instinctive and expressive. Yeah. It's like the other side of my brain that, it's kind of where I came from is the paint and letting the paint do whatever it wants to do.
Yeah.
Whereas the typewriter, if people that have only seen that wouldn't know about the other side, would they? I'm kind of keen to keep going in the different directions.
Brilliant.
And the freedom of to use paint and colour.
I suppose you've got pretty much red or black to play with, haven't you, at the moment?
I've had a rainbow typewriter ribbon
from
Luke. He does the rainbow, he makes them himself. And I did a parakeet because the two greens that were on that ribbon were exactly the parakeet colours.
Ah, there you go.
So for Art Car Boot Fair, the flora and fauna one, I did a parakeet.
Brilliant.
With the two greens. But I don't really like to use it too much, the colour, because I think
it loses its language, doesn't it?
I like the restrictions of the media.
Yeah.
Because, like this medium, because it's, you know, you've got that much width, you've got this many characters, and do what you can, sort of thing.
I mean, I can imagine yours mainly being black on white. The occasional use of the bit of red would make people like myself go, oh, of course, typewriters have got a red bit of red ribbon as well, haven't they?
Yeah. A lot of people still ask, where did you get that red then? So,
Brilliant.
I'm open to all questions anytime. So
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Kira, which piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection?
I mean, you see this one here. This is the blown up version of a smaller piece. I think it's because it's got my son in it and he's got his hands in his head. Hands in his head? Head in his hand.
Either way.
And this is me trying to get emotion out of the situation because he's got this kind of, who knows what he's thinking?
Yeah.
Who knows what he's thinking any of the time? And is it my right to know, you know?
Yeah, of
all
course.
All those kind of motherly kind of the guilt and the, is it me? Am I making him go like this?
What have I done to him?
Yeah. And then this was, it was in a pub actually. And this, the above it was the glass that had, you know, those lovely old glass panels with the cup designs. But I kind of wanted it to come out of his, like it's come, like it's his ideas or thoughts coming out of his head. So that's what I mean by like trying to go for an authentic kind of vision and instinctive when it comes to, he was sitting there, it's from a photo. So I just took a photo of him. He didn't want me to take a photo.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably one of the most, for me, personal pieces.
Brilliant. A good thing for your work is the fact from a distance, it looks like a drawing with an unusual texture. Then when you get closer, it's that little wow factor when you go, ah, that's what that is. It's always a good thing to have a layer to peel away.
Yeah, I don't usually do it myself, but when I've got help at a fair or when I've done pop-up shops or things like that, whoever's talking to people, kind of vaguely looking at my work, they'll say, oh, did you see how it's done? And yeah, if I'm, I've loved like seeing it from a distance, you see them going, oh yeah, and then you see them go, and you know,
that's
like
nice.
That,
yeah,
for me it's just like, yes, they've gone in. Yeah.
Brilliant. Because you've sort of reeled them in, haven't you, you know, with the image itself, and then as they get closer, it's a little visual gift, if you like, you know.
Yeah, it's like unlocking a little key into to your world.
Yeah.
And if you can get them to ask why, then you're doing your job.
Yeah.
And I think one person in the street goes, huh? When they see them, then I'm like, job done, you know?
Brilliant.
It's not, people don't go, huh, enough.
They can very much hear your keys tapping away from a distance because you use a microphone and speaker for them as well, don't you?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I see that you had that at the art car
boot. That was me going electric, you see. Big art car boot.
Yeah. If there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, my God. I have thought about, you know, like if I did a group show. Well, that's a really tricky one to answer right now. I'd like to think about it, but I can't, can I? Can I think about it?
Well, we won't be doing a sequel.
Maybe I'll just do it.
Exactly. Oh, there you go.
Come. There's somebody from my uni. He was a really good painter, and I always thought I'd really like to show with him. And that's Richard Batty.
Oh, I think I know Richard Batty.
Yeah,
I think so. But I love it that you've picked someone whose work you admired in those early days.
But yeah, I've always thought I'd love to show with him. There's another couple of people that were on my course that we weren't connected all these years, but one of them I've got back in touch with, and I think we're going to do a collaboration. So, yeah, for me, it's like, I really want to do collaborations.
Well, talking of which, you'd done one with Tracy Newell, didn't you, with the shoes?
Yeah, the shoe. Two different images.
Yeah.
I've never seen a pair of shoes with two different images. I haven't seen anything like it, so I'm really proud of that we did that.
And did they go into production, or were they just a one-off?
No, they did. So she put a competition out in 2020, I think. My friend Yuna, she said, "Oh, you've got to submit something." And I was the lucky winner, and she got, I think, 39 pairs done.
Oh, nice!
And they sold out, and then she's restocking them now.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, they're really, really beautiful shoes and really high quality, and they'll last for years. But this design is really special. And for me, it was something that I imagined one day I might do with a shoe designer. And like, I'm hoping there's lots of other, I can imagine it on so many things. In so many,
well, it's opened up a possibility of an area that you've possibly or probably not even thought of before.
Not tapped into it properly yet.
Because if you think of clothing and artists, you automatically think of t-shirts or hoodies or something, don't you, you know?
Well, I can see it, like, you know, like ball gowns or like suits, men's suits.
Yeah.
With like maybe the lining is all tight.
Nice, yeah.
But it's finding the designer, isn't it?
Could you not even just print your stuff onto silk or satin?
Yeah, so
and go and take it to a tailor and say, like, you know, I'll even give you 6 meters of this or whatever they need for a jacket.
Yeah.
And see what it looks like, you know.
Yeah. So I got a dress made by somebody my sister knows for when I was at Dubai Watch Week.
Nice.
So I've got the fabric done with all the watch parts.
Yeah.
So I had that made. I really, really love to collaborate. And, you know, when the two minds get together, it's better than the sum of its parts, you know, that kind of thing. That when all them brainstorming, I absolutely love all that. So to find somebody that connects, where our work really, really connects with each other and there's like a synergy, that's what I really love to do. Because me getting a tailor to make a suit, I just think it's getting together of minds.
Well, I love collaborations anyway. Not only doing them, I've had the opportunity to be able to create collaborations for other artists, you know.
People together.
I'd done a thing called Face Value a few years ago. It only stopped when pandemic happened. So I would ask one artist to donate an artwork to me in the knowledge that I would be giving it to another artist to do with whatever they want, but you don't know who that artist is.
Okay.
So you have no idea what the collaborative piece is going to be.
Okay.
So I could be giving it to a designer, shoe designer, dress designer, or I could be giving it to a graffiti artist or, you know, a portrait or whomever, you know.
Yeah, oh, that's so interesting.
And we've had some absolutely stunning results. I was doing this at Jealous. I've done it at Jealous twice.
Oh, wow.
It was a really interesting thing. Yeah, collaborations are, they're a beautiful thing. I know, again, I'm, you know, tapping myself on the back, but it was a really good little thing that artists really enjoyed.
Yeah, wow.
Just looking at doing a Face Value 4 with another charity. And you are perfect for it. You are perfect for it.
I'd absolutely love to, and to see, you know, like everything at the end.
Yeah, it was quite good. But shall I ask you a question?
Come on, then.
How about if you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
Maybe something to do with food.
Is that the influence from your sister?
Well, we all really appreciate food, but I don't know if it's I don't know. Or something to do with music or food, I think. If it wasn't art, it would be one of those.
Do you play anything?
Something, no. But I love, it's one of those lifelong passions. I think I'd enjoy the live, when I was typing, all these amazing artists at the War Child benefit.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago. I just love that it's like the electric vibe. It's
nice.
Just, and I was typing the eye of like everyone from Portishead, like Beth Gibbons, was like ultimate woman / anyone eye that I wanted to type.
Brilliant. She
was willing to do it. Thing, you know, with food, it would be like in an environment that's buzzing, you know.
Yeah. So do you feel a lot of difference between working in the studio and working in the street?
I guess no one can hear my like laughter when I'm like hitting on some sort of weird truth. But when it's on the street, I'm kind of, it's like a mad laugh in my head. When I'm doing something that is tapping into something that I don't understand, but there's something in it that is unexplainable. And I get that in the studio, but I've got music on in the studio and in the street, it's just everything that's out there is.
Well, you've got, you're saying about you like, you know, you like singing and music. you've already got your mic and your speaker there. You're like some sort of aesthetic busker.
I'm scared to actually do it, aren't I?
You're halfway there, aren't you?
Me and my sister used to go to a thing called Cat Weasel in Oxford. It's poetry, song, and, you know, anything that you wanted to do, get up and open mic kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's very much a nurturing kind of environment.
Yeah.
There's a couple of rules, you know. If someone's on the stage, you zip it. And me and my sister used to sit up on the cushions at the front and watch, like, every act. And we were like, maybe one day we could...
Brilliant.
And Matt Sage, who runs Cat Weasel, he used to say, remember, it's a million miles from where you're sitting to where they are there. And I don't know, we're both like, but one day I got up and did a talk at the British Library, like a few weeks after my second baby was born. It was called The Boring Talks.
Nice.
And it was all about stationery, and the guy running it, James somebody, he did a talk about the staple. And I was just like, yeah, I've got to do that. So he asked me to come and talk about my work. And it was in the Knowledge Centre. So with all the like lecture theatre kind of set up. And he said how many people were going to be there. And like that gives me just like panic. But I was just like, yeah, I'll do it. And I did it. And I was like wheeling my baby along, dictaphoning like what I was going to say.
Excellent.
And then I actually got up there and did it. And until the moment I was actually on the stage, I was like, had fight or flight kind of.
Oh, been there. And how did you feel when you walked off the stage?
Amazing. And there were moments when I was doing the talk that I actually enjoyed it. Got a couple of laughs as well. So that's...
That always helped. So. But it's nice to find that crossover moment between fear and enjoyment. There is a...
Yeah, I didn't think there would be any somewhere. Enjoyment at all.
Yeah.
Apart from that it was, once it was done, yeah, like every emotion of like adrenaline. And when I was doing the eyes of some of the artists, that a couple of them, where it was before they went and did their gig, and they said that it's they never get that moment, like 10 minutes of nothing, not thinking of anything. And that it was, they really enjoy, you know, it was like a therapeutic kind of 10 minutes of like meditative almost. And then a couple of them came and did that, had theirs straight after coming off the stage. So for me, that's like, wow, like that's a privilege to capture. There must be some of that in that eye of what they've just done or what they're about to do. Because I was like, aren't you quite high from performing? And they're like, yeah, coming down.
They're so sitting there jittering.
Them come down. And I was like, maybe like Mick Jagger would be like, I need Kira.
A bit of relax therapy.
Fly her over. We need our eyes taped.
And it was just the eye. So you was quite close up to him, was you?
Just the eye, yeah. So let me show you. It's an ongoing project called Inspiring Characters.
Yeah.
See what I did there? and... Yeah, so is that focus?
Yeah, brilliant.
So that's Paul McGann's eye. He was there. And I had to say, oh, can you wait? Because Beth wants me to type her. So he was like, yeah, I'll wait. And I was just like, it's a surreal situation. But it felt like completely right.
Yeah. Well, it's something very different for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite exciting. If you're not in that world as such, it's quite exciting to just sit there in front of someone to see how they see you.
That's why I like that just the eye. It is like partly like the vision that I'm have been inspired by in some way. There is something they've said or done or an action that maybe is positive or like an attitude or, and I just think that's their vision. So yeah, just the eye. And the eye is 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not taking up anyone's time really. But the conversation that we have in that time is so, for me, it's like valuable. It's like gold.
It's very intimate, isn't it? It's just you and that person.
There's no planned questions. It's just, do you want to do it? Yes. Okay, here we are. Let's do it. And I'm looking, especially if they're looking into my eye and we've never met, then it's this 10 minutes of staring into a complete stranger's eye. And you end up...
Very personal.
Because we don't always look each other in, especially in London, you know, we're avoiding eye contact all the time. And
yeah.
Well, not everybody, but one day I hope to have all the eyes when I find the venue and I have all the eyes around the room and the recording from the chat.
Nice.
Playing all out loud so that it's really distracting and... you kind of like, as you go from one to the other, you'll sort of go into, you sort of catch little bits of what we talked about.
Brilliant. Kira, have you anything coming up?
I'm working with a brewery.
Excellent.
My kind of collaboration. we're sort of launching a thing, hopefully at the end of the summer or early autumn.
Nice.
So that's in Oxford. I'm doing commissions and things, but I don't have any shows or anything coming up apart from little places that I like to, you know, there's a pub in Chiswick that has a wall of my work.
Oh, nice.
And I'm about to go and just swap all the work in there because they love telling everybody, you know, like doing that, huh? They really love the work and telling people that drink there about it, and I mainly do stuff places like that,
really, yeah,
where the people kind of gather and enjoy themselves. And the other one is up in at Banners in Crouch End that Richard Batty wants me to do. He said there's a 4.5 meter wall. He had an exhibition a few years ago in Crouch End in that space, like an art centre up there.
How can anyone find your work, be it Instagram or website?
It's at KR Typewriter Art on Instagram and Facebook a little bit, but
yeah,
Twitter. And my website's kirarathbone.com. I'm sort of building a new website, actually. So,
right, well, Kira, I think... that is all my questions asked. So thank you very much for your time.
To go.
Yeah, you can go now.
No, it was a genuine pleasure. I didn't really know you before, but I feel like we've connected now.
Good.
Yeah. Thank you to answer some interesting questions as well. Not just
good.
Like how long does it take to do a picture?
Right, Kira, again, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Gary. Cool. Bye.
See you later. Ta-da. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.